two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats says, "Hello, can I have a pint of your finest lemonade, please? I don't want any alcohol in it. Don't add any Alka-Pops or whatever other horrors you add nowadays. I'm an adult. I'm quite happy to drink my lemonade, uncontaminated by any hideous additions. Don't water it down either. I want pure, undiluted lemonade, please. A whole pint of it in a glass. They're not in some childish bowl that you put on the floor for me. Because I'm an upright citizen of this community, but I'm also an upright humanoid talking cat. I'm not a little kitten that comes along and you give a saucer of milk to. No, I want it in a pint glass and I want it not to be milk. I want it to be lemonade, proper lemonade. The proper lemonade that you see on the likes of the Charlie Brown specials. There's always some kid in these things running a lemonade stand outside her house. You have a little stand that they've built and they've got a sign up on it saying lemonade 5 cents or whatever it is. You see sweaty businessmen in suits walking along and they stop and they patronise this kid by buying a glass of lemonade and say, oh, that kid's going to be the next Donald Trump. Isn't it great? He's 7 years of age and he's already got a business running. Well, I think someone should look at the books for that business. Is it set up properly? Do you have proper official directors who sign off on things? Do you have shareholders meetings? Do you inform your shareholders of all the spendings that are going on here, making a sign just to run a business that's going to run for 6 hours outside your house until you get sick of it and find some other thing to obsess about? No, that's not a properly run business. I understand there's a thing called the Better Business Bureau in America. You should report them to that. If you have one of those kids outside your house running a lemonade stand, there's nothing wrong with it. But if there's a thing called the Better Business Bureau, you should go and tell them, hello, I see this business outside on the road there. It could be better. Can you please do something about it? And they'll say, oh, certainly, we'll make this better. How could it be better? Well, it could be run by an adult for one thing. I thought we had laws in this country and others against child labour. His child is running the company. He's employing himself as child labour. That's appalling. That child needs rescuing from themselves. If an adult did that, if an adult set up a lemonade company, a huge lemonade multi-conglomerate as an adult would, and then made himself work and do all the sales, that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? Or would it? Wait a minute. Maybe it wouldn't. And the man behind the bar says, I've forgotten, are we still on the you ordering a glass of lemonade? Or have you just completely digressed to the narrator going off on the thing about lemonade stands in Charlie Brown? And the cat says, I don't know. You're overthinking this. He may or may not come back to us. We don't know. Just let it flow. It's stream of consciousness. And the barman says, oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. Making it all about me. I'm not even real. I'm very sorry. Let's just let him carry on. And the cat says, let's just stop speaking then and let him go on about the lemonade stand. And the kid at the lemonade stand says, hello, can I sell you a glass of my finest lemonade? And the man in the suit, who looks like Michael Douglas in the movie Falling Down, about an hour into that movie, Michael Douglas's character in Falling Down is having a very bad day. An hour into the movie, he's halfway home to the people at home. He's probably going to murder or bring in a car somewhere and shoot people or something. Basically, he's having a breakdown, a violent breakdown. We're about 60 minutes into the movie. I think at that point, he's starting to look a bit scruffy. He's not wearing a suit anymore. He's loosened his tie. He's a bit of a mess. I'm not sure at what point in the movie he starts to have a big crack across his glasses lens. Maybe that's more 80 or 90 minutes in. But at 60 minutes, he's certainly starting to look a bit rough. He's sweaty. He's a mess. Things aren't going well at all. And the kid is starting to look like that. Oh, no, wait, the man who's approached the kid starting to look like that. Well, hopefully he hasn't got to the violent part yet. But if you've seen Falling Down, you'll now be worried about that kid, because the man in Falling Down, Michael Douglas, he goes into a fast food place. the young adults working in there. He goes nuts at them. He ends up pointing a gun at them and holding the place up. As they said, breakfast ended a few minutes ago and he just wants a bit of breakfast. See, what's he going to say to some kid who's making very exaggerated claims about this lemonade product he's selling? I suppose we better hope that the man who reported them just isn't Michael Douglas in Falling Down, which he probably isn't. Because most men in the street who go up to lemonade stands, they're not Michael Douglas in Falling Down. They're just normal members of the public. It's quite likely they like kids, and not in some weird way. They're just good with kids. They're prepared to go up and buy a lemonade off a kid who's running a lemonade stand and ruffle their hair and say, oh, you're going to be a big businessman. Hopefully not so much Donald Trump, but that other fella. Who's that other fella who's in his 80s? I forget his name. He's a billionaire, and every morning he sets off to work in his car. There is a documentary about him. He's elderly now, and every morning he still stops at a McDonald's drive-thru, and depending on what his share price is, he decides whether he's going to let himself have a nice breakfast meal. What's his name? It starts with W or something. I'm not looking it up now, but I'll put his name in the show description. Is his name Harvey? No, not Harvey. I think it might be something beginning with W. I only know about him from that documentary, really. He goes on and on about his McDonald's. He denies himself his proper favourite McDonald's breakfast if his share price is down that day. That's a fucking idiot, if you don't mind me saying so. He's presented as someone being rather more intelligent than your average billionaire. Well, no, that's a fucking idiot. You're a billionaire. Buy yourself a proper breakfast thing. Don't be punishing yourself. That's ridiculous. You're a grown man. Stop it. Stop. You're going to be dead soon. You think he's in his 80s. You've made it. You've reached the big time. You own half the country. Stop it. I tell you what you do. Get a pancakes and syrup meal. But also get a pancakes and sausage meal. If you get the pancake and sausage meal, you're only going to get two pancakes because they give you a sausage patty as well. You want the sausage patty as well, but you only want that because that's how you eat the pancakes less messily. You make a sandwich out of two of the pancakes plus the sausage patty, and then you put the syrup on the sausage patty and you eat it as a sandwich and it's slightly less messy. So get one sausage patty. No, get two sausage and pancake meals because then you'll have two sausage patties and four pancakes. You can make two sandwiches that way and put the syrup in on top of the thing and then eat it that way. Get whatever the fuck you want. You're a grown man who owns half the planet. Stop it. Stop it. Anyway, this kid is selling the lemonade. He's in a Charlie Brown type situation. The dog running around with a bird following him for some reason. He had a bird called Woodstock in that. Now, there was an area called Woodstock in Athy in County Kildare. I lived in a place called Athy in County Kildare for more than a decade, which ended with moving here a few years ago. And there was an area in Athy called Woodstock. It's nothing much to speak of. It's just an area of the town. It's just a townland. I suppose it has somewhat of a street. Two shops in it, just off the end of the main street. There's a clinic down there, there's a garage. It was called Woodstock. And I first came across that when we moved there. I thought, that's a very unusual name to have in this country. They only know it from that yellow bird on the Charlie Brown show and that thing where the hippies went. It wasn't even in the current century and was in another country. In fact, Was it on another continent? Was Woodstock in America or was it England? I don't know. Either way, it's certainly in another country. So I think Woodstock was America. There was another thing in England that was similar but has a different name. That's still going. Now, America, you also have the Burning Man Festival, don't you? And that's where you have all these bands come on and do stuff. And while they're doing stuff, they're building a funeral pyre. And at the end of the festival, you put a man on the fire and you burn him to death. You literally call it the Burning Man Festival and somehow you get away with it because you have proper licensing for it. You have it properly licensed and organised, so you crossed all your I's and dotted all your T's, so you get away with it. Well, I say get away with it. If it's licensed, it's perfectly legal. Whatever you're doing there is licensed. You're not getting away with anything. You're doing everything above board. I don't know why I criticise it at all. I should be criticising the authorities for allowing it. You shouldn't be allowing that. Talk to your lawmakers about that. You shouldn't have a thing where you burn someone to death and you can do that all legally within the law. No. Well, at least it's regulated. I'll give you that. It's regulated. I suppose that's slightly preferable to have it going on unregulated and people getting away with doing that in full view of the law and nobody doing anything about it. I suppose that's good. At least it's within the law. But change the law, for Christ's sake. That's not a thing you should be having. No. No Burning Men festivals. That's ridiculous. And also no having kids selling lemonade at stalls. That's a food poisoning disaster waiting to happen. One day a kid is going to get unlucky, poison everyone, and he'll have ruined his life. Once upon a time, there was a dog. A dog. Basically a dog. And this dog, he was sitting on the road one day, minding his own business and having a look around. Absent-mindedly, he wasn't looking at anything in particular. He was looking inward. He was thinking. He was having a good long think for himself. There's no way of switching your eyes off while you're thinking, so it may have looked like he was looking around. He was just doing it automatically. Just instinct. You keep your guard out. You keep your guard on with your eyes, just as when you're driving and your mind wanders. You're still watching the road. Part of you is still watching the road, and part of this dog was still watching the road. What he was expecting to happen with the road, I don't know. Maybe he thought the road might rise and try and overtake his territory or something. Or maybe he thought another dog would come along and usurp his place on the road. But if you have a dog, train your dog not to expect to have a place on the road. For its own safety, it shouldn't feel a sense of belonging to the middle of the road or a sense of ownership over it. Well, your dog, he means well. He thinks, well, guard this road that my owner lives on. I'll make sure no one comes along here who doesn't get a piece of my mind. If someone comes along in a car, I'll go bark, 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 etc. I'll give them a stern verbal warning. Well, I say verbal. It'll be an audio warning. I may not be using any verbs. When people say verbal warning, they don't necessarily mean you're using verbs, although you probably are. You could be using nouns, adverbs, adjectives. What's an adjective? I get them all mixed up, who cares? Or you might be just speaking in punctuation. You might be just saying things like dot, 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 dot. Now a dog wouldn't be doing that, and nor would a human. It may be a Morse code transmission, I don't know. Morse code is surprisingly easy to learn, incidentally. I learned Morse code once from a puzzle book. It's just some dots. You draw a kind of grid, put some dots in the grid, and you use that as your key. I forget the exact details, but I was able to solve some puzzles involving Morse code within minutes. In fact, this whole puzzle book made me feel very good about myself. I remember it was about 8 or 9. I got my hands on a puzzle book that my sibling had borrowed from someone. And the last chapter of the puzzle book had a mock Mensa intelligence test. This is a mock-up of the real intelligence test for entry into Mensa. Mensa is some sort of organization for the super intelligent people with high IQs. So I did the Mensa intelligence test on this. I got 9¾ answers correct out of 10. Now, I perhaps may not have read through the whole scoring system. I don't know, but I definitely got 9¾ correct out of 10 questions. So, does that mean I'm super intelligent? I don't know. If you end a sentence where I don't know, that implies that you're not super intelligent. Maybe you are super intelligent, you don't just don't have access to information. You can be super intelligent and then know very little because you don't own any books or have internet. Could be people living in some jungle somewhere who are super, super, super intelligent. They're capable of figuring out pi to 15,000 decimal places. I say figure it out. It's already been figured out. I suppose they could repeat the figuring out of it, recreate it, or have it memorized. I suppose there's a difference between memorizing pi to 15,000 decimal places and calculating pi to 15,000 decimal places. But I think both are quite impressive as feats. But neither of them are relevant in a jungle. Yeah, maybe. If you have internet in the jungle, which is very unlikely, because you probably need to have some expensive satellite connection and you need to go climb up to the top of some tree and put a dish on it. Satellite internet can be very, 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 very expensive. Very expensive. Whoever has this in the jungle better have some online job that's making it very worthwhile to get the internet there. And they probably don't, because what kind of job would that involve? I don't know. There's all these online work things where you get paid 0.0001 cent per task or something. If you're living in the jungle and you're doing that, why don't you just not live in the jungle and do that elsewhere? It'd be more profitable because you'd be paying less for your internet connection. Although then you're probably going to be paying rent as well and stuff like that, I suppose. Why would you live in the jungle? Or a jungle? I say the jungle. There's more than one. Everything I've read or watched about the jungle, it seems terrifying. I watched a couple of episodes of I Shouldn't Be Alive Now. I've read at least one book upon which an episode was based. This fella went into the jungle one day in some tourist destination. I think he was a tour guide or something. He was with the other tour guides. They went up to the edge of the jungle and they parked, and he said he wanted to go in and look at some sculpture or something, some historical thing that was just on the edge of the jungle on the path. A couple of minutes walk away, so he went into the jungle to see that. And then he got lost. He was shouting out at the people out in the car so they could call his name and he could follow their voice. And when he tried to follow the voice, he just got lost more. He spent 2 weeks in the jungle lost after that. Went wandering around, wandering and wandering and wandering and wandering. He lost his mind. He went absolutely stark raving nuts. In the TV show about it, they show him seeing apparitions of Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, talking to him in the jungle, saying something about getting them out of there. Then a couple of minutes later, he wanders along a bit and suddenly comes out on the beach. And suddenly he's back in civilization somehow. Jungles sound terrifying. They sound absolutely fucking terrifying. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of endless, endless, endless trees and growth. There's no paths. You just wander around. You have no idea what direction you're going in. A search party comes out to find you by plane. They don't see you because everything's covered in a canopy of trees. You can try climbing up to the top of the trees. Then what? You sit there and wait till someone comes along and checks all the tops of the trees. Now they're not going to find you. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. They won't find you. They won't find you. Nobody's going to find you. You're not even going to find yourself in there. You've been lost for 2 weeks and you've gone mad and you think you found yourself. You're just having a psychotic break. You haven't really found yourself. You've lost yourself. I suppose it doesn't really matter. If you're experiencing that as a positive thing, you think you found yourself, then I suppose no harm done. Well, except for the starving to death and stuff. You have to find water as well. You're kind of fucked if you don't find water in these places. That's the thing I learned about watching several seasons of I Shouldn't Be Alive. If you run out of water for any reason, even if you have a good excuse, you say, I ran out of water because I was only expecting to be in here for an hour. Being here in the jungle for 2 weeks and I've run out of water through no fault of my own, so I shouldn't be penalised for this. Unfortunately, the human body penalises you for that regardless. It says, I don't care why you've been out of water, you're going to die now. And before you do, you're going to lose your mind and you're going to go through physical agony because apparently dehydration is agonizing. You get a headache because your porridge hasn't got enough water in it. You get a pain in the stomach because your stomach isn't working right. Your organs stop working correctly. You stop sweating because there's no water. And then if you try to find your sweat from the day before and gather it up, it's all evaporated already. You can't just look in the laundry basket and find some of your sweat from the previous day. No, that's all gone. But you might find some urine from yesterday in your laundry, if you haven't already consumed and reconsumed it two or three times, in which case, again, it's no use to you. So where are you going to find water? Bring water with you. Even if you're going in there for an hour or two, you're just walking along a little path at the edge of it. What are you expecting to find a shop in there? Bring some water. You might get thirsty. You never know. If you get thirsty, then you can't just say, no, I'm only here on a short trip. I shouldn't be required to hydrate myself, as they call it nowadays. I shouldn't be required to hydrate myself. This is nonsense. I'm only in here on a short trip. Well, you are in here on a short trip, but you're stuck. Your trip doesn't end until you get out of there, so you're in there on a long trip now. You're essentially an explorer now, whether you want to be or not. So you're going exploring the jungle for 3 weeks. You haven't even brought enough water just because you didn't know. At the very least, if you don't want to be carrying a lot of water with you, park your car at the edge of the jungle. Have one of those pickup trucks like you Americans like to have. You Americans always like to go on about your pickup trucks. You say, oh, I got a pickup truck. I used to be confused about this. I used to think a pickup truck meant some sort of a crane or something on the back of a truck. You pick up piles of bricks because you're a builder. You pick up pallets of material on this little electrical crane that's attached to the back of your truck. No, it turns out a pickup truck is just the thing that you go when you go to the shop to pick up stuff. They say, I'm going down to the shop and I'm going to pick up some margarine and some brown bread and a packet of whatever confectionery items you like to have over there that all seem to have peanut butter in them. I'm going to pick up some stuff from the grocery shop and put them in my pickup truck because that's what a pickup truck is for, apparently. Pick up just means going to get something from somewhere, apparently. You go down to the post office to collect a parcel. Might it just even be a registered letter, little envelope, and you call that picking up my mail. You say, oh, I'm going to pick up my mail. Why it hasn't been delivered to my house, I don't know. Maybe my house is too remote and the postman can't get to it. Well, if that's the case, how come you're able to get to the post office? Is the difficulty just one way? You live on a one-way street, perhaps, is that it? Well, then you're going to have an awful trouble getting home from the post office if that's the case. How are you going to manage that? Anyway, you park your pickup truck on the edge of the jungle, at the very least. Have some sort of thing attached to that that's controlled by... Oh, wait, how would this work? Have something anyway that's like a hose. Have a water thing in it with a hose, a tank of water attached to it. Kind of a sprinkler. Like one of those things you buy on big lawns, one of those sprinkler things. Have a timer on it. So if you're not back within an hour, it starts spraying water over the trees in every direction. Spraying it into the jungle, but in every direction. Within a 180 degree radius of the edge of the jungle. Spray at least half a mile. So if you're within half a mile, you at least have a bit of water sprayed on you. You might be able to figure out from that what direction the water was coming from, and that'll get you back to your truck. I know that's not the perfect plan, but something like that. Have a plan, for Christ's sake. Use your pickup truck for something positive like that. That's what you call a self-rescue. You hear about self-rescues a lot on mountaineering stuff where you get stuck. If you're on Mount Everest and you slip and you're hanging off the edge of a cliff with one hand dangling down because it's falling off and the other hand attached to a bit of rope that's fraying and about to break and there's no one there to get you out of there, you have to do a self-rescue. And a self-rescue just basically means get the fuck out of there of your own accord. One fella did a miraculous self-rescue where he broke his leg. Everyone thought he was dead. He wasn't dead. He was hanging off a rope somewhere. and the rope slipped a bit more, so he's hanging off it even more, and then he landed under a crevice, got himself out of there somehow, and then crawled down the mountain, arrived back at base camp, and goes, "Hello, I'm over here. As you can see, I've been crawling for several miles. I'm half dead. I don't think I'm going to make it the last half kilometer. Can you come over, please? Now, did you see I'm here? No, I'm not a ghost. I'm alive. I know you abandoned me 3 nights ago. And you look like you're getting ready to get out of here. And yes, I know I smell of piss. This fella arrived. He'd broken his leg badly, and he somehow managed to get himself out of a crevice halfway up some mountain. It wasn't Everest, but it was one of those mountains over there where Everest is, I think. And he got himself down. Miraculously got himself down to the bottom of the base camp, and he was nearly there, and he was covered in piss. If I remember rightly, they got him back to the camp and they got him into the tent, and then he shit himself. He describes this in the book. I think he describes he shit himself very badly in the tent, inside his clothes that he couldn't get out of. Because apparently it's a big deal to get out of your clothes and have a shit in a camp on Mount Everest, even in the base camp. I suppose it's particularly difficult if you're very seriously injured, as this man was. No, he shit everywhere, and people were going in, trying to not make a big deal of holding their noses. Because in fairness, it wasn't really his fault. They'd kind of left him thinking he was dead. In fact, I think they'd already phoned his wife and told her he was dead. So now they're going to have to ring her back and say, no, he's not dead after all. And then they'll be like the boy who cried wolf. Except in this case, the boy cries wolf. And then comes back 2 days later and says, hello, turns out there isn't a wolf after all. What's the wife supposed to say to that? She'd say, oh, wait a minute though, you said there was a wolf 2 days ago. I've been mourning about the wolf for 2 days now. Now you're telling me there isn't a wolf. Could it possibly be that the wolf was there 2 days ago and is now gone? Whatever that means in terms of my husband being dead, I don't know. But just going by the wolf analogy, because it's easier to think in analogies than think in terms of what has actually happened in real life, which is too painful. So I'll assume you're telling me that the wolf that you got me to cry about a couple of days ago is now no longer there. So the wolf was real, it's just gone now. Because wolves can move, you know, wolves move. They don't stand in the same spot all day. No. They come along, they track you for a bit, they do whatever they're going to do, and then they get out of there. Maybe they go and get some other wolves and say, look, I found some losers here. We'll come back in a week or two when everybody's body parts have all grown back to whatever extent they can. Because there's always a wolf if I do that. He wouldn't just go, there's some good eating in this camp. I think we'll come back tomorrow with the whole pack. No, I'd say, oh, I've eaten some of their legs now. We wait a few weeks for all their stuff to grow back. Then there'll be some nice fresh blood and fresh flesh to get her teeth into. So that's the jungle for you. Don't do the jungle on your own. I would argue that you shouldn't go into the jungle at all. There was another one. There was this fella. He paid some tour guides who weren't really tour guides. It turned out he paid them to bring him down the river in the jungle for a long summer voyage. And one night he was in the tent and he heard the two of them discussing how they were going to go over and knife him to death because they were sick to death of him. They'd made their money and they wanted to just end this now. So for some reason they were going to stab him to death. So he made a run for it. He was lost for a couple of more weeks in the jungle on foot, walking along near the river. And at one point, his dog, who had run away, manages to find him. And he's all delighted to see the dog. His dog, who's in the jungle, his dog catches up with him. Unfortunately, it's just at the point where he hasn't eaten for about a week. And he's worried that he might die. And he's looking at this dog and thinking, should I eat this dog? Maybe I should eat this dog. And he says, no, I can't eat my dog. What in the name of Christ? No. What is wrong with me? No. And then a few minutes later, he decides he'll eat the dog after all. So he kills the dog. Then he finds he can't eat the dog for some reason. It's not working out. So the dog's dead, but he still hasn't eaten. A few days later, he stumbles upon a village somewhere and he manages to get out of the jungle. So that's what happens if you go into the jungle. You end up trying to eat your dog. So you kill your dog, but you can't bring yourself to eat it. So then you have a dead dog and possibly a dead you if you're not careful. Well, you obviously haven't been careful because you're in a situation whereby you've had to kill a dog and you're still lost in the jungle. So I say if you're not careful, clearly you haven't been careful. Although, to be fair, in this case, the man was a victim. But still, if you want to see jungle stuff, take day trips to the zoological gardens. You can see some jungle animals there. And then go to some forest. Separate your foliage visit from your jungle animal visit. Enjoy the animals in the zoo. Then go for a short trip up the Dublin Mountains. Go for a walk somewhere where there's some nice forests. But not a load of horrendous animals who can eat your face off. You don't have a lot of animals who can eat your face off in this country. Not as many as other countries anyway. We don't have jungles. My county has a lot of forests and mountains in it. There's forests and mountains and mountains and forests, and I'm sure there's wolves and things up there. We don't have all these huge, gigantic cats that can eat your face off. We don't have elephants except in the zoo. And what else do we not have? It's hard to make a list of what you don't have because you don't have it. It's not like doing a stock take. If you have a stock take and just go, here's what we have. We have that and that and that and that and that and that and that. You can't see, but I'm pointing at things. I'm not really pointing. I'm just pointing my finger in different places. I can't see what I'm looking at. I think at the moment I'm pointing at my printer. I can't really see that. Now I'm pointing at, oh, that's the bottle of water. I'm pointing at that. Now I'm just pointing vaguely over there towards the ensuite bathroom door. Actually, I think I'm pointing at a packet of Doug brand toilet rolls. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or if it was a deleted segment, but for the first time ever, our household is having to use Doug brand toilet paper. And not very satisfactory Doug brand toilet paper. Because Kitten Soft seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth since the summer in this country. You can't find it in the big supermarkets. It's just gone. And for some reason, they seem now to just have the Doug brand that everyone seems to think is adorable. It's not. The puppy on the adverts might be adorable. Well, it's no Kitten Soft in terms of its practical uses. Kitten Soft was a proper toilet paper. It worked properly. It did its job. This one doesn't do its job, I can tell you. It does not. It's very unsatisfactory. And what's even more dissatisfactory and alarming is that I can't find any information on what's happened to Kitten Soft. It's just disappeared from the supermarkets. It's just gone. It's terrible. That's another thing you don't have in the jungle, incidentally. You don't have branded toilet paper. Unless you bring it with you. You can bring a couple of rolls with you. But you're going to run out at some point. And then what? Well, hopefully you'll be home by then because you'll have brought enough because you're organized. You're an organized outdoors man or outdoors woman or outdoors person or outdoors human or outdoors. If you're an outdoors animal, you probably don't have toilet paper with you, do you? You probably don't. You probably evolved some natural instinctive way of dealing with stuff like that. You probably lick your anus or something, do you? You probably do. And yes, we're afraid of you. Isn't that odd? You have these animals that lick their own anus because they haven't figured out toilet paper and we're terrified of them. As we think, oh, they're so advanced, superior species that are going to murder us all in our beds. Absolutely ridiculous. They live in the jungle where they have huge rainfall. They're quite happy to sit there and get drenched every night as it pours down rain on top of them. And they've no toilet paper, but we're afraid of them. We look up to them as superiors. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. Until they eat you, and then it's not ridiculous. Then you realize, oh wait, there's a reason we're afraid of them. Perhaps our natural instincts to be afraid of them, even though we can't explain it, are correct. I suppose fear exists for a reason. Is fear exists for a reason to tell you, I don't know what's going on with these beasts that live in the jungle, but I know I should be afraid of them, even though I don't know why. Anyway, that's jungles for you. They're absolutely appalling. If you're listening to this in the back of a pickup truck, perhaps you've just been picked up. Perhaps you're a hitchhiker. Few Americans in your TV shows. Especially if it's in some remote area, you take a lift in the back of a pickup truck. You say something through the driver's window to the driver. You get up into the back of the truck like you're a bit of sewage that's being carted around from farm to farm. And you're all delighted about it. You say, oh, look, we got a lift on this pickup truck. That's not getting a lift. That's no better than being towed. You might as well be being towed, except without a vehicle. You might as well be being towed by a rope, like something you'd expect in some horror movie. Did Hannibal do something like that? No, I don't think so. I've certainly seen horror movies or thrillers or maybe episodes of Criminal Minds. I can't remember, but there's certainly one or two where the baddie picks up the victim and tows him using a rope connected to the back of a truck. I suppose you could do a car either. You wouldn't need a pickup truck for that. If you're getting a pickup truck just so you can attach a rope to the back of it and tow one of your victims along the road, watch them bleed to death or whatever it is you're trying to do. For one thing, you need very good rear view mirror system for that, unless you get someone else to drive. For another thing, no, you don't need a truck for that. A car is perfectly adequate. Even a motorbike, you could do that. I think you could probably have much more fun doing it with a motorbike. Find some remote car park somewhere out in the forest, out of season when there's no tourists or anything in the car park. Kind of place that has picnic tables and a big gravel car park. You just turn up, park wherever you want, and then attach your victim using a rope to the back of the vehicle and just drive around in circles around the car park on the gravel. I presume being towed along gravel is quite painful. Now, I'm not recommending you do this. That's an awful thing to do to someone. Don't do anything like this. Don't even do it on a proper road. I know I'm implying that doing it upon a proper road is less painful. Well, that's also incorrect, because if you're doing it on a proper road, you're not going to be driving around in circles slowly like in the car park. No, you'd be driving at a great speed along some highway then. That's even worse. If you had to choose between towed along a highway at high speed behind a car on a proper tarmacadam surface, or being towed in some remote forest gravel or mud car park behind the car that's just going round in circles around the car park, not as fast, I think I'd probably choose the gravel one. You might find something to grab onto so you can free yourself. Maybe a picnic table or a stump of a tree or something. Or you might have opportunities to try and escape. This car keeps braking and going around corners and turning. You have an opportunity to grab the back of the car and climb onto it. If it has a sunroof, you could do some cool heroic shit. Punch a hole in the sunroof and then punch down towards the driver. If the front of the car is 12 o'clock, then you punch at a 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock angle. But it's more complicated than that because you have to punch down as well. So while the direction you'd be punching relatively on the 2D basis would be 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock towards the driver in the right front seat, you'd also be punching down. And I don't think there's a provision for that in the clock face direction system, is there? I don't think so. That's a 2D thing. When people say there's a bogey at your 7 o'clock or there's someone at your 9 o'clock trying to overtake, whoever it is, if you're on the sunroof of a car punching in, you go, oh, he's over there. He's in a 2 o'clock direction from here. Well, you have to express the angle for down as well. So you're punching in a 2 o'clock direction on the horizontal plane, but in a 4 o'clock direction because you're punching down on the vertical plane. Now, there's no standard way of expressing that. Of course there isn't. Why would there be a big proper official system for expressing what angle you punch someone when you're stuck on top of a car trying to break free from someone who's towing you behind? Because it doesn't happen very often. And then there's also the other thing about how you're punching down in terms of society. You're punching up or you're punching down. Some rich famous comedian mocking and criticizing homeless people, that might be considered punching down. The victim itself in real life wouldn't be thinking about punching up or punching down. What angle would I think of in terms of a societal thing? No, they're just thinking, this cunt has got me in there. I suppose you are punching up then. in that instance. You're punching up. You're this fella's victim. Well, of course you are. You're punching up. You're the victim and you're managing to get out of this situation by punching down through the sunroof and across the 2 o'clock horizontal thing, but you're punching up metaphorically. So you're punching down and up at the same time, really, because you're punching up, like you're getting at your victim. You're gaining the upper hand in this situation. So yes, of course, you're punching up. You're punching up. You just mightn't think of it too much like that. The actor would be thinking about that more than the real-life victim would, because the actor has to portray the fact that he's punching up. He has to think about, how am I going to play this? How am I going to play this? The actor is thinking about this shit. I'm reading a book by Patrick Stewart at the moment. He goes on about how he thinks about how he's going to play things. We'll go into some Shakespeare play and say, how am I going to play this? Will I think of this as punching up or punching down? Or will I think of this as shooting a fella? Well, it's not very likely in a Shakespearean play. They don't shoot people in Shakespearean play unless it's some movie version of a Shakespeare play that's being made for young people and probably has vampires in it. Can you even shoot a vampire? I don't think you can. That depends on the rules of the particular movie, I suppose. The movie universe can have different rules from movie to movie, from franchise to franchise. Just because you can't shoot a vampire in your world, it doesn't mean another world they can't do that. Of course, in any universe, you can shoot a vampire. It's just that some universes, it has an effect, and in other universe, it doesn't have an effect, so it's pointless. That's the difference, I suppose. And then, of course, you have these giant trucks. What are they called? Are they called giant trucks or big trucks or something? In American sitcoms and OSMD, an ad comes on the television saying, come down to the stadium next weekend for the big trucks thing. There's a big trucks event going on, the big trucks. We're going to drive the big trucks around some stadium or racetrack or something. These trucks with these gigantic, gigantic, gigantic wheels on them. Ridiculously gigantic, unfeasibly gigantic wheels on them. You would never drive that along a normal road. Because for one thing, you wouldn't be able to get up into the cabin. For another thing, a truck has little semicircles cut out of the bottom of the body of the truck. A little semicircle cut out of that, and that's the space for the wheel. Your joint wheel is not going to fit in that. So you got the truck right on top of the wheels at the very top, like you're on a penny farthing bicycle or something, except it's a truck. It's very different from a penny farthing bicycle. Besides which, very few people who are involved in driving these big trucks in these competitions, these giant trucks, very few of those people have ever even seen a penny farthing bicycle. So that's not going to be of any help to them. To be fair though, they've seen plenty of big truck competitions, probably been going to them all their lives. Their fathers probably brought them to some big trucks event when they were 6 months old and they said, this is going to be your pastime now. Everybody has to have a pastime and it has to be a sport. Now, it can be attending football. That's what a lot of fathers do. They say, I'm going to bring you to this football game. You're going to be into football for the rest of your life. Every Saturday for the rest of your life, you're going to go to some football thing or else you're going to watch some football thing on TV. You're going to become totally addicted to these people running around in the field, except in this case, you're going to be addicted to watching men driving around in unfeasibly giant trucks in a... Do they do it in a field in a stadium? I'm not sure. I don't think it's like a rally out in the countryside and you're lying up along the road, is it? No. It's not like that, a big truck thing. No, that would be unfeasible. It was on some sort of closed circuit course or else in a stadium or something. Do they do stunts or something? Maybe they do. Do you line up a load of old cars that you got from the scrapyard and tell the truck drivers, whoever can drive along the top of these cars most efficiently wins a prize? How do they measure that? Does it mean you drive along it without doing any further damage to these cars? Or do you drive along and do further damage to these cars? Is the purpose of the game to crush the cars further? Or is it to not crush them and drive across them without doing any damage? Of course, none of that matters in real life because they're using these cars that they got from a scrapyard for the event, so they're already damaged. I presume there's some sort of business. They're not just doing it for charity. There's not those people saying, oh, we want to contribute to society. There's some young men here who are going to grow up to be criminals and drug dealers or whatever else, unless they have a proper holiday for their Saturday afternoon. So we're going to set that up. We're going to get some huge, gigantic trucks, and we're going to put them on huge, gigantic wheels. Actually, the trucks don't have to be that big, do they? It's the wheels that are big. Am I confusing different sports here? I'm not sure. Is there one sport where there's giant trucks? And is there another one where there's normal sized trucks, but with gigantic, ridiculously gigantic wheels underneath them? I don't know. Do you know? You probably do. Or maybe you don't. If you do know, you're probably into this sport and you're very annoyed at me at the moment because I'm critiquing your sport, about which I clearly know nothing. I'm making it up as I go along. The main thing I know about these big trucks competitions is from the show House MD. His one friend, Wilson, likes to go to these truck events, and House goes with him sometimes. They go to these things, they watch these big trucks doing whatever it is they do, and then they go back to the hospital and they cure someone of some hideous mystery disease. Then they go home, and then they come back and they do it all over again the next day. Well, no. I suppose if the event is on the Saturday, they probably have the Sunday off, because sick people, they don't turn up at hospitals on the Sunday. No, because they know there's not going to be anyone there. They'll turn up on the Monday. And then on the Monday, they'll go in and they'll say, hello, I've got a mystery disease. Except, no, they don't really do that in House. They say, I've got a disease. And because they've watched normal medical shows and they've lived in a world where you've had doctors and medicine for hundreds of years, they fully expect the doctor to be able to have a look and say, oh, we'll do a couple of testing and I'll tell you what's wrong with you medically. I can tell you what else is wrong with you right now, if you like. I haven't figured out what's wrong with you medically. I have some ideas, but I'm going to confirm them with tests. But if you like, I can tell you right now everything else that's wrong with you. It'll just be opinions, though, because I'm only qualified to tell you about the medical stuff. But rest assured, I'm forming some opinions about you, about some non-medical stuff. Every word you say, I'm forming opinions about you, my patient. But I'm responsible and also afraid of being sacked or disciplined, so I'll just stick to the medical stuff. Now, in the show, House MD, House just says whatever the fuck he wants. And there's very few consequences. At least not for the first season or two. The best procedural dramas, stuff like Criminal Minds and House MD, to keep them slightly realistic, they have to reach a point at least once every two seasons or so. They have to reach a point where the writers show that they recognize that the stuff these lunatics are doing to solve their crimes or cure their patients by doing all sorts of dodgy and extreme stuff that a normal doctor or a normal detective wouldn't be allowed to get away with. They have to show the doctor or the lawyer or the policeman or the criminal minds investigator or whatever William Shatner is in Boston Legal. Every now and then, to keep it realistic, you have an episode or two where they almost get their comeuppance. House has a patient who's an arsehole. Well, he's not an arsehole, he's a perfectly reasonable man, but because of the nature of the programme, we are convinced that the man is an arsehole because he's mean to our hero House, who is in fact an arsehole. And in this episode, I think House, funnily enough, he sticks a needle into the cop's arse, and the cop takes this opportunity to look into this. He says, wait a minute, this fella's doing drugs all the time. He's getting away with all sorts of shit. And then there's several episodes where the cop is investigating House and doing everything he can, determined to get him removed from that hospital and thrown into a hole somewhere in the prison. You have something like that happen every season or two. And then the rest of the season, you can go back to having your hero do all sorts of unreasonable shit. And if anyone accuses the writers of being ridiculous, they can always say, look at the season finale on season two, which was a cliffhanger to season three, and they do that every couple of years. He almost got his comeuppance. There's another one, double episode. The episode starts like this. You see some shots of some stuff happening in a very not House environment. In fact, the only regular cast member in this double episode is House. It's a whole new thing, and it's like one of those movies. They always have Robin Williams in them. They won't anymore, sadly, but they used to always have Robin Williams in these things. There'd be some hospital where everyone was suffering from psychiatric problems, and there's all sorts of shit happening, all sorts of characters. So they open up on this scene in a psychiatric hospital, and you have the Radiohead song. It goes a little something like this. I can't play that on the harmonica. I don't know the notes, but it goes do 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 do. No alarms and no surprises, etc. You get two episodes of that, and then House gets released back to his job harming people, and that's the last comeuppance you see for another year or a year and a half or so. You go back to doing the ridiculous shit that no normal person can get away with. And they do this in all the best procedural dramas. They do it in Criminal Minds as well. Sometimes they have the whole team get suspended for an investigation because the stuff they're doing is absolute nonsense and no normal, well, supposedly no normal Federal Bureau of Investigation of the United States of America employee will get away with this shit. This shit they do where they go hunting down criminals and catching them and saving people. Very extreme. Very extreme what they do. You have a private jet. They jump into this private jet every week. This fella, Hutch, who's the boss, he goes, wheels up in 15, or wheels up in 10, or wheels up in 30. Never explained exactly what that means. It's supposed to mean something along the lines of, be on the plane in 15 minutes. Or do you have an airport right outside the office? That seems unlikely. Perhaps it means the wheels on your wheelie suitcase should be up off the ground in 15 minutes and that we're leaving here then. But that's not how a wheelie case works, is it? I haven't done a lot of business travel. In fact, I don't think I've ever done any business travel. Not overnight, anyway. I've never had to bring a suitcase. But these wheelie suitcases, you see them on The Apprentice a lot. They get these overnight little wheelie suitcases. I don't know what the hell you're supposed to fit into them. I presume the idea is they're small enough to fit into the cabin of a plane. What use is that if you can't fit anything into it? That's not the point. The point is, Hutch will say, wheels up in 15. And I imagine he means, have your suitcases ready to go and then you get up and start walking towards the door with your suitcase behind you. But when you do that, the wheels don't go up. Your suitcase is standing upright on its two wheels on the floor and you start to move to tow it. They have two wheels on one side. The other side of the wheelie suitcase goes up. The wheels stay on the ground. So that's not wheels up. That's wheels staying exactly where they are and just start moving. So that's not wheels up. So maybe that's not what he means. Maybe it means the wheels on the airplane will go up. The landing gear will go up 15 minutes from now, which apart from being quite fast, I don't see how he can dictate that or control that. Is he in charge of the pilots? Does he tell the pilots when they can take off, when it's safe to go? Does he give them clearance to go out onto the main runway, regardless of whether or not there's a plane coming down? I've seen enough episodes of Air Crash Investigation to know that that's a terrible idea and also probably highly illegal. So no matter how important you are in your big fancy crime scene investigation job or your Criminal Minds thing or your whatever it is, you're not going to go into some airport and start bossing the people around saying, oh, ignore the air traffic controller. I told these people, my staff, at the beginning of this episode, wheels up in 20, and that was 16 minutes ago, so you'd have your wheels up in 4 minutes from now. And they'll go, okay, well, firstly, you need to get onto the plane. They never show them getting onto the plane. They just go wheels up in 20, then they have a commercial break. And next thing you know, they're on the plane and they're having a meeting on the plane. Going, oh, when we get to the destination, I want you to go and get the car and go out to the cops and say hello to the cops. They've kindly invited us in on this investigation that they haven't a fucking clue what they're doing with. So we have to call in as a courtesy call and say, hello, we're here. And the cops say something like, oh, you can set up over there. And sometimes they have a nice little corner set up for them. They go into this cop place on the other side of the country where they're being asked in to help with a murder investigation. By help, they usually mean, tell us what the fuck to do because we don't know what we're doing. We're in a nice, normal town that doesn't have murders every 5 minutes. I know you people are all lunatics. You deal with murders every 3 days. You have a murder to go and visit. Well, every 3 days for part of the year. Because you do, what, 20, 22, 23, 24 murders a year. Is that it? So every 3 days, but then you take some breaks. They don't show the episodes where they're just doing admin. There is about 7 seasons into Criminal Minds, one of the characters does go out of the blue. He says to someone, oh, of course, there's much more to this job than what you see us doing in terms of investigating murders. And that came as a big surprise to me. Well, what else are you doing? You're running around solving these murders, a very, very stressful job. You're telling me that's only a small part of your job. I know there's admin involved elsewhere. Give talks to primary schools, warning kids about taking up a job as a murderer. Maybe you do. And now that I think about it, they do show some other stuff. They show them going to prisons to interview long convicted and jailed serial killers to try and learn from them. There's that. They probably do some training days. They probably have some stupid training day that you have to arrange every month in some local office somewhere, some regional office. They do wheels up for that as well. But of course, you're going to do a training day. You're giving a training class somewhere. You can't very well say wheels up in 20. No, because you planned that weeks in advance. It's scheduled. You probably enjoy the novelty of not having to leave in a hurry. Wheels up on the 17th of June. We'll leave here at 6:30 in the morning and then we'll have a nice long leisurely breakfast at the airport. Although there's quite a queue for breakfast at the airport, I find. Airports always have a queue for breakfasts. Because people like having breakfast at the airport. It's very popular. It's usually because they've left their house at 3 in the morning. And who feels like having a bowl of cornflakes and a scrambled egg in their house at 3 in the morning? No. They feed their cat and then they have a shit because they know they're not going to be in any toilet that they want to use again until very late that night when they get to their hotel. That's the biggest problem when you're traveling by air. Anytime I've gone, it's usually been quite a long distance. You leave the house at 4 in the morning. You know full well the next time you're going to have a bathroom that's in any way private is going to be in your hotel room something like 16 hours later. So you make sure you deal with all your ablutions then. Make sure that anything else that you're going to need to do through the day can be handled at a urinal in a disgusting airport toilet. And then you plan for that. What you don't do, by the way, is fill up on coffee just before you get on the plane. I think I covered this whole issue of caffeine on a plane at some point. So let's delete this bit. So no, they enjoy the novelty of getting on the plane at a scheduled time. Planned weeks in advance. Some secretary has arranged a course, made sure everyone knows what time to show up. And they just turn up and give a course. A tea trolley comes in at 11 o'clock. A selection of hot waters and tea bags. Any course I've been involved in my working life. People expect you to bring in a selection of something to put in your mouth every 2 hours. Usually it's scheduled for something like 9:30 to 4. So you all know pure well what's going to happen. Around 1:30 in the afternoon, the instructor will say, oh, I think we're nearly finished here. We'll finish up and then you can go home. That's what happens. But still people say, oh, we're an hour into it now. I expect to have a coffee break and have liquids available on a trolley outside this room. So that's what they do. They arrange liquids on a trolley. It's usually something that's left there. There's a trolley and then there's one of those things you find in self-service breakfast rooms in hotels. If you're going on a bus tour at 4 in the morning, they leave you out a flask thing. You pull the button on the flask and there's a little tap on it. You pour some water into your cup, miserable little cup. You put a tea bag in it. And then someone tells you, have you never made tea before? You put the tea bag in first. I even explained this on the previous episode, I think. Didn't I? I think I explained how to make tea in the previous episode. I was going on about the 18th century or something. They didn't have tea bags yet, but they still made tea that way. I think I even explained how to make a pot of tea for some reason when I was talking about the era when you'd send children down the coal mines. Nobody drinks tea anyway anymore. They drink coffee, any course I've ever been on in an office work environment, I get sent on some word processing course. There's going to be 3 people here who have never used a computer in their life. And we don't want you to have to spend the rest of your career dealing with these people and having them come up to you every 5 minutes saying, how do I type the letter W? You have to go type the letter V twice. And then before you take it out of the typewriter, you get a little felt tip pen and you connect up the 2 Vs. So it's a W. Make sure you connect it with a sharp angle, not a curved thing, because it looks silly. It looks like it's not printed. I suppose you could also show them how to type the W. I find typing W quite difficult these days. This finger is a bit weird. For those of you who've never learned to touch type, when you're touch typing, each of your fingers is responsible for particular keys. So your small finger on your left hand will be responsible for the W and for the 3 or 4 letters that are around the W. What's over there? Is it the... Oh yes, A, around the letter A, and then there's the W, which you stretch out a bit from the... So the A would be the closest key to your little finger on your left hand. So you want to type a W, you activate that finger. You don't put it straight down on the A though, you stretch it out a bit. I think you stretch it out to the left a bit, and that's a bit of a stretch to get the W. And that's why they got rid of the WWW thing. Most websites now, if they're configured correctly, you don't need to put in the WWW. You can just forget that. You can omit the first 3 layers and the first dot. You can just go into your head .ie. They've made it simpler for my website in the last few years since the comeback. Instead of having it .com, I made .ie. So that's one less letter again. Now, if you're a touch typer, that dot involves the 3rd finger on your right hand, and you kind of have to reach down a bit. Do right-handed people use the other hand for the dot? I don't know. I'm left-handed. I taught myself to touch type using a typing game many years ago. And there's nothing about whether you're right-handed or left-handed. So I don't know. Do right-handed people have a whole different experience of typing? Maybe they do. Maybe they put the keyboard the other way around or something, or they get a right-handed keyboard specially made for them. If you're right-handed, you can get anything you want. They make right-handed keyboards that are just specially for right-handed people, and they're just the norm. Go into any shop or on Amazon or anywhere else and go, right, I need a new keyboard. My specifications are it has to be right-handed. So I'll narrow my search to just keyboards that are suitable for right-handed people. And you look up the results and it's the same number of results as you do if you just searched for keyboards. And when I'm searching for keyboards, what I do is go and search in my purchase history and find the one that I've broken. I pick that out and go order again, and then I order another 3 of them and hope that gets me through the next year. I use a high visibility keyboard. It's got luminous yellow keys, bold black text. Still can't see the fucking thing. So it's very lucky I learned the touch type at an early age. At least I can see where the keyboard is. It's usually over there, just between me and the screen. I've got a screen in front of me right now and there's no keyboard connected to it at all because it's a tablet. I'm 4 inches from the screen. I can see the clock ticking away on here. This segment has been going for 30 minutes, 7 seconds, 8 seconds, 9 seconds, 10 seconds, 12 points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That point something of a second number is moving very fast. It's of no use to anyone, really. You can see the seconds going up second by second. But then there's a decimal after that, and there's a very fast-moving digit after that. It's moving so fast you can't see the numbers. How does that help me in any way? Well, I suppose I can glance at that and see that it's moving, which means we're recording. I could be playing and it would still be going at that speed, so that doesn't tell me anything. I suppose the big record button is a clue. The big red round virtual button. I suppose there's that. I just realised the record button is level with my mouth. The virtual big red dot, that's level with my mouth. And the counter numbers are level with my eyes. So I suppose if I watch the clock, maybe I'm supposed to monitor it with my mouth. Could that be right? Should I lick it or something? maybe that would work. Can you lick the screen and figure out whether, I know you wouldn't be able to figure out everything that's on it in any detail, but there's a big red dot symboling the record button is on. So I wonder if I could lick that and then lick another part of the screen, would I know there's a difference in the static electricity or something, so I could determine that it's recording without being able to see it. Because that might be an issue someday. I'm gradually getting blinder and blinder. I'm sitting closer and closer to this thing, getting harder to see if I'm recording. Could be all sorts of shit going on around this screen that I wouldn't know about. Maybe there's some way I can lick it. I don't think people learn Braille anymore. I think that's gone out of fashion. I do have technological solutions instead. I use some technological solutions. There is tactile stuff you can do on the screen. There is tactile stuff, I think. But I don't need much from this tablet. I just use it to record. I just need to see that it's recording. So if I could lick the big red thing on here and determine that that's the record button and it's activated because it feels different on the tongue to the rest of the screen, which it should, because the rest of the screen is mostly black. Surely that wouldn't be a big problem, especially if the contrast is high enough. The colour contrast between the recording symbol and the rest of the screen, which is black, is certainly very high. So surely it wouldn't be that difficult to make it feel different on the tongue. Should the time ever come when I need that as confirmation? Maybe I'll look into that. At least we have a plan there. As my retinas continue to disintegrate, my tongue is one of the parts of my body that functions quite well still. I think I might have somewhat destroyed my taste senses by having too much hot sauce in my 20s and 30s, I think. But I'm not talking about being able to taste the screen. I'm talking about being able to detect a difference in static or something. A texture. Taste and texture are not the same thing. So it's the texture. Tasting the screen would be ridiculous. That's like something out of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Maybe for children who are going blind, you've come up with something like that for their childish educational laptops to make it fun. But no, I'm an adult. I don't want to taste and see, oh, the record button tastes like raspberry and the rest of it tastes like licorice, the black screen. No, I don't want that. I want to be able to notice a different in texture with my tongue so the record button will taste a bit more staticky. So let's get working on that.
Into your head.
I don't know American history. I just know American television from the 1980s. And American television from the 1980s here in Ireland meant reruns of American television from the 1960s and 70s. Wherever cheap crap Irish television could get its hands on. Little House on the Prairie. You see these kind of caravan things. Covered prairie trailer things. They're equivalent of caravans. It wasn't toiletry disposal system and a big driver's section that turns into a bed and a fold-down dining room table and a place to hang your bicycles on the back. Caravans were very different in those days. They had these caravans that were basically a trailer with a white hood over it, a curved roof hood, white fabric thing. Presume it was waterproof. They had them over all the trailers. And they all looked exactly the same, all of these wagon trailer things, whatever you call them, caravans. They all looked exactly the same. These things you move your kids around in when you're on the prairie or traveling to your next prairie that you're going to live on or wherever it is you're doing. Maybe you're going on a weekend away in your prairie caravan. They all looked exactly the same, as if they're mass produced. Now, maybe the trailers are all different and they're just getting their trailer fabric roof things from one local sewing woman. She makes them all the same. I suppose that counts as being mass produced. There's one woman there and she's taught all the other sewing people from the nearby villages how to make these things, so they're all pretty much the same. I suppose that's reasonable. When you see a few of these on these shows at the same time, it kind of looks like it's come off an assembly line somewhere, just like the Ford motor car would. And Henry Ford started all this thing with making mass-produced cars. He was a bit like Dr. Kellogg in that he was a bit weird as well. And I only found out recently there's more than one. There was two Kellogg brothers. They were both Kellogg-y and were both weird. But that's not, we're talking about Henry Ford here, not Mr. Kellogg. Mr. Kellogg was the inventor of Kellogg's Corn Flakes. I don't know if he named them after himself or after his brother, now that I think about it. Now that I think about that further, it's weird to name something after yourself. It's slightly less weird to name it after your brother. Perhaps one of them was a Dr. Kellogg and one of them was a Mr. Kellogg. And Mr. Kellogg was perhaps something along the lines of Roy Disney, who did the accounts for Walt Disney and probably took a more leading role in the company after Walt Disney was dead. Well, maybe the Kellogg brothers were like that. Maybe Mr. Kellogg, if there was a Mr. Kellogg and a Dr. Kellogg, Mr. Kellogg did the accounts and the branding or something. He talked to the marketing people and say, what should we name this cornflakes product? I think we name it Dr. Kellogg's Cornflakes after my brother. He's a doctor and it sounds good if you name him that. So they call them Dr. Kellogg's Cornflakes. They dropped the doctor after a while. And now they think about it, that's slightly less weird than naming it after yourself. Whichever one of the brothers chose the name Kellogg's Cornflakes, they were probably naming it after the other brother. And in comparison, slightly less weird than naming your product after a slang word for cocaine, especially if you're trying to cover up the fact that there's cocaine in it. And Kellogg's Cornflakes was supposed to be bland. He didn't want people to think there was cocaine in that. And in fact, there probably wasn't. It tastes like nothing. If you're going to put cocaine in something, you want to at least have an affected taste to make it worth it. If there is cocaine in cornflakes, I can tell you they've certainly found some way to deactivate the active ingredient and they're just using it for taste or texture or something. And it tastes like nothing. That's why they came up with those crunchy nut cornflakes. You know the things they have? Bits of nut and they have honey flavor or they have the Tony the Tiger version. They found things to do to cornflakes to make them more interesting. Not just slapping a tiger onto the box, by the way. They actually make them taste slightly more interesting. So there's that. Anyway, these Prairie Caravan things, they look like they might all be mass-produced somewhere. There's a uniform appearance to them, at least to the tent part. You don't really go around making bespoke covers for trailers. If you're the local trailer cover manufacturer woman, I know it seems sexist to say it's a woman, but this was the 1600s or the 1700s or something. Men were out doing things on the farm or hunting down rhinoceroses or preaching in Sunday school or something. And the women were at home sewing things and cooking. That's just the way it was. I'm not saying it's right. That's the way it was. It was probably a woman did all that shit, sewing things together. If a man was doing that, he'd have just said, we'll get that old dog kennel and we'll put that on the back of the horse and cart thing and we'll use that as a little cabin. Be just like when you have a fishing boat and they have an ice box and if there's, oh wait, this isn't a normal fishing boat I'm thinking of at all. This is an episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive. There's a book of the genre I Shouldn't Be Alive. This fisherman, him and this other fella who died quite early on in the experience. This fella survived for weeks. Their fishing boat was adrift. They had a huge ice box, so they turned that upside down and climbed into it for shelter and they used that as their tent. So I suppose you could do that on the back of a prairie carriage thing if you didn't want to have someone sewing a big fancy white thing to cover it. Just get a box. Maybe you have a toolbox and those things. Men who have vans generally have a big toolbox in the back of it. Now, if they're going on holidays, I presume they remove the toolbox. They put a couple of beds in the back, a couple of mattresses. Oh, maybe they don't. Maybe people don't use vans as caravans for holidays. So not really the same thing, to be fair. One is a metal box with no windows. And the other is a metal box with windows and a satellite dish attached to the back and a kitchen sink, a fold-away cooker. You look at these mobile home things now and luxury mobile home things on YouTube. One thing I saw has two staircases in it. It's got two separate upstairs on it. It's got kind of mezzanine level beds, one at the front and one at the back. One of them has a little spiral staircase going up to it, and the other one has a normal staircase. Few Americans call them RV. I don't. As far as I can ascertain, RV stands for road vehicle. all vehicles are road vehicles unless it's, well, I suppose unless it's an off-road vehicle. And you're going to want to get off the road at some point. A sleeper van, that's what I call it. It's a sleeper van. To be fair, I've never looked this up. I've always assumed that that stood for road vehicle. Am I going to look her up during the editing process later and find it means something else? I tell you, if I do, that will be quite a revelation. It's only just occurred to me that it might be something other than road vehicle. I've always thought it was weird that you called them that. You called it an RV. Road vehicle. What in the name of Christ is that supposed to tell you? You had a bowled up bicycle for a while. That could be a road vehicle. It could also be a train vehicle. I used to get the fold up bicycle and bring it with me on the train. I did that for a short time. Then I got a moped for about a year before I gave up driving. That could be called a road vehicle. I just certainly drove her on roads. I certainly did. I drove her on roads. There are scrambler bikes. They look like motorbikes and we use them for off-road stuff. If you're a lunatic, you bring your children every Saturday to some place where you're going scrambler bikes. You have your 80-year-old children riding around on mountains. They're like mountain bikes, except they're motorbikes. And you put your children on that. And they'd be off-road vehicles. Quad bikes, that's a thing as well. Supposedly they'd be safer because they have four wheels. But that was in a whole episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive as well. In fact, there may have been more than one. There was a whole episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive where there was a very mature and intelligent man who was well trained and experienced in survival. And he got stuck under his quad bike for 2 or 3 days and then he died. So don't tell me quad bikes are safe or they're not. That's horrendous. He got trapped under his own quad bike in a desert. So those aren't road vehicles. So if you're saying road vehicle for your camper van, at least he wouldn't be a danger of having it confused with a scrambler bike or a quad bike or a fold-up bicycle or a moped. When you say road vehicle, that could mean double-decker bus, could mean a car. It could mean one of those duck tour things. It's usually some old army vehicle. And they convert them so they can also float in a pond and act as a boat. So those could be considered road vehicles because they go on the road and they drive into the pond and then they drive back onto the road and then they go into another pond or a canal, go along the canal or a river for a bit and then come out of that and then go up and park in front of Christchurch Cathedral and let all the tourists out. They go into Christchurch Cathedral and they say, oh, this is Christchurch Cathedral, isn't it? Great. Go down into the basement there. When you go to visit Christchurch Cathedral in Dublin, I think I did on a school tour once. They bring you down into the basement. And I can't remember what was in the basement. But from what I hear from other cathedrals and things now, they bury people in the basement. If you're a monarch or something, you have a good chance of being buried in a basement in a cathedral somewhere. Can you call it burying? I suppose you can. If you're putting them in a basement, why would you bury them as well? You're already underground. The whole point of a basement surely is so you can visit the underground. The whole point of a basement is to make use of the underground. It's like when you convert an attic. You're making use of the roof space so you can enter it and live in it. So when you build a basement, you're not doing it so you can dig a hole in the basement and bury someone under the basement. No. If you want to do that, just don't build a basement in the first place and just dig a hole in the ground floor. And then they're in the basement space that you weren't going to use apparently for anything other than putting dead bodies in. I suppose people have two-story basements and the lower level. I think the first ever two-story basement I was ever conscious of being in was in the department store Filene's in Boston. That's gone now, or it's turned into a Primark. The other thing called Filene's Basement. It was a chain of shops. They weren't all in basements, but they were named after the original Filene's Basement, which was in the basement of Filene's department store. And that basement had two levels. So you'd be on the ground store of Filene's, which has about 5 floors above it. So first thing you do, of course, when you go into one of these places is go up the 5 floors and you find where the jacks is. You have a piss before someone notices that you're not buying anything. That's what your first priority should be when you go into a department store in the middle of a city. Make sure you have your piss sorted. You don't have to worry about that for the rest of the day. Have a piss. And then you go down and down, because it's quite expensive. So you go down the 5 flights of stairs to the ground floor, and then you say, oh, Filene's basement. That's where they tell you to go. If you're a tourist going to Boston, they'll tell you, visit Filene's basement. You have this special system. They discount everything automatically. The longer it's being there, this unsold stock or something. You have a system whereby the longer it's being there, the more discounted it becomes. And it goes down automatically. So you go down into Filene's basement, and then there's another basement underneath it. So it's a 2-story basement. Now, which counts as the main floor of that basement, I don't know, because the entrance would be on the upper basement floor. So I suppose the lower basement floor would be considered the upstairs in a way. At least one of those basement floors had an exit into a subway station. Now, if that entrance was in the lower basement floor, that would conflict then with my claim that the upper basement floor is the main entrance of the basement store. I suppose that's possible. A subway network can have different subway lines running at different levels. So there might well be a subway station that's 2 levels down and it's level with the lower basement floor of a Filene's basement store. So that may well be an entrance. In which case, that's a bit snobbish, because the Filene's basement is kind of for poorer people. So they go, oh, you can have your entrance through the horrible subway station here, through a hole in the ground. Well, everyone in the main floor of the main department store comes in through this lovely big entrance from the main street. Either way, I think they all went bust anyway a few years ago. The Irish-owned chain Penny's is known as Primark abroad. So it doesn't get confused with JC Penney's. They took it over and that's a Penny's now. So in your face, losers. I suppose that's a meaningless thing to say. Is that a meaningless thing to say? In your face, losers. Certainly stupid and inappropriate here. I take that back. That was a ridiculous thing to say. I haven't been there since. I presume there's 8 floors of very cheap socks. So I suppose there's that. But what is that, if there is that? And is it worth having? You want to have 8 floors of Penny's. So we have a couple of joint flagship Penny's stores here. And at most, they're 3 big floors. The one I go to would be full of underpants and socks and cheap runners. But I don't think you'd be able to fill up a whole 6-story department store with that stuff in the middle of Boston. So maybe they didn't take the whole building. I don't know. Does it really matter? It probably doesn't. And that's why we talk about it here. Things on here don't matter. This is all just nonsense. In fact, that's the new slogan for this podcast. Just fill up on nonsense. I just took the almost unprecedented step of doing some research after the event over an earlier segment when I mentioned RVs. I went on about how they're called road vehicles and how that's ridiculous. I just did a search. I wish I hadn't, to be perfectly honest, but I have my phone here. I have my phone here so I can monitor my uploads of these segments to Dropbox and the beginning of the processing thereof. I haven't got it here to do research. In recent years, I don't like to have distractions like the internet available to me when I'm recording. I don't hide in a dark room. And with just the stuff I need to record and upload these things and make sure everything's backed up. I know I made the mistake of opening up the browser and I searched for RV. And it stands for recreational vehicle, not road vehicle. For Christ's sake, that's ruined about half an hour of content on here. It's made it not make sense. It stands for recreational vehicle. I was always sure it was road vehicle. Why did I think that? Well, surely they have some of these things. They're not recreational vehicles, though. You can have one of them that you live in. Some people live in those things. Is it still a recreational vehicle then? You're not using it to go on holiday. You're living, if you're living in it as your day-to-day thing, it's not a recreational vehicle. If you're coming home to live and sleep in it, I know you do recreational stuff in your home. So every house is partly a recreational building. So if you live in your RV, you don't call that a recreational vehicle, surely. No, it's a road vehicle. I know that's equally ridiculous, calling it a road vehicle. But you're doing more than recreation in it. You're having your breakfast in it. You're going to the toilet. You're sleeping and eating and maybe doing your homework or bringing a work home with you if you have a job. Because you aspire to having an off-road vehicle with no wheels and a roof on it with a garden someday, aka a house or an apartment. So you've got a job. So you come home from work and people are telling you that thing you go home after a hard day at the office or wherever you work, you come home to your thing and people call that a recreational vehicle. That's ridiculous. No, that's insulting to you, if that's you. It's insulting to you to call that a road vehicle. It's like telling your colleagues who live in a house, oh, you're just going home to your fun house. You're going home to your fun house. It's a nice, you have a water slide going up and down the stairs. You have a television there for recreation. You have a back garden that you sunbathe in. You don't do any work in that house. Oh, that's a fun house. Oh, you would never say that to them. It'd be very rude. Because most people are quite house proud. People who have a house, they're quite house proud. They don't want to call her, oh, that's your recreational house. Unless they have two houses. In which case, that's someone very wealthy. That's a very senior boss. So you're not going to talk to them like that. Unless you're also a very senior boss, in which case you wouldn't be living in an RV. So no. It's insulting to you to call that a recreational vehicle if you're living in it. That's nonsense. That's like saying that's your what's that thing they say? You see this in men in sitcoms sometimes they have their little den. What's that called? In things like, oh, some insulting sitcom where men are treated as people who get it. They get the privilege of having a little room in a shed or something. That's their little corner, their den. There's a name for that. And that's like if you called your whole house that name. That's insulting. Probably not as insulting if I can't think of the name. But still, what's that thing called? Male. A man cave. A man cave. You called something a man cave. You had a house and you called it a man cave because it's just you. That's insulting. No, it's a proper. You're an adult with a house. And you wouldn't call that, oh, that's your fun vehicle. That's your recreational vehicle. No, that's my home on wheels. So fuck off. If I had a boathouse, you wouldn't call it a recreational vehicle. No, you call it a house. They called her boat house, even though it's not really a house. It's not even on wheels. It's a boat house. It's a thing floating in a canal somewhere. You get to call that a boat house. In fact, we look up to people who have boat houses. We think, oh, that's someone. They've got their lives together. They know what they want. They've got a boat house. They wanted a house and they wanted a boat and they liked nature. They got a boat house. And we look up to people like that. In fact, there's been children's television programs along the lines of Postman Pat. There was one about, wasn't there Rosie and Jim? Was that a canal boat thing? I think so. It was Rosie and Jim are puppets, and there's an old man. I think he's probably the puppeteer or the narrator or something, but he has a boat house, and I think Rosie and Jim either live with him or visit him. And it's a big barge that's on the canal. And he's considered a very respectable, admirable old man, wise old man. There's been at least one or two children's programs where they have portrayed life in a houseboat as something to look, aspire to or respect. Well, no, you get one of those, but it's on wheels and suddenly, no, that's recreational. No, it's not a real house. That's just your recreational thing. Fuck off. Don't put up with that shit. If you have a recreational vehicle that you live in, say to them, no, that's my house. That's my house. It's like a houseboat when it's got wheels. It's my houseboat on wheels. And not to be confused with a boathouse. That's a, A boat house is a different thing. A boat house is a house beside the river where boating associations or boat clubs have basically a little warehouse beside the harbour. That's a different thing. If you live in that, you're not doing very well at either at all. So unless they've been converted, of course, the trendy modern things where everything, you convert a house and you convert something that's not a house into a house. You buy an old church somewhere that's closed down, or you buy an old gate, an old lockkeeper's office, a thing beside a gatekeeper's lodge or something. You turn that into a house. Although some of those, I suppose, are already houses. Well, no, that's very fashionable. You get an old church or an old restaurant or an old schoolhouse. You turn it into a house, but you name it the old schoolhouse or something. That's quite a fashionable thing to do. But if you get an old boathouse, but you don't convert it, you just live in it, then that's just a little shed you're living in. So there's that. We've a lot to get on with today. Items that need to be attended to. Issues that need to be addressed. Topics. Oh, topics. We've got lots and lots of topics. We've got topics coming out of the remains of this glass of water. I'm not going to pour another because we're nearly done here. I've been recording for a couple of hours now. Nearly at the end. All I have to do is record an ending. So why I'm doing this, I don't know. This isn't an ending. I don't go with topics coming up, lots of stuff at the end. No, you don't do that. Although that would be the appropriate time to do it, because that's when I know what I've recorded, so I know there's stuff coming up. We're supposed to do things backwards, apparently. The very beginning, you're supposed to say, oh, you've a lot of great stuff coming up today. It's going to be great. How do you know? I've no way of knowing when I start recording whether this is going to be great or not. I'm far better placed to make that call now. I've been in here nearly 3 hours. I've recorded at least 2 hours of audio. Now, admittedly, some of that is shit, and you won't hear it, don't worry. But no, I'm far better placed to say now, at this stage in the production process, whether or not there's stuff coming up. But I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to do the ending now. I'll say, I think we're approaching the end of today's episode of Into Your Head Podcast. Hello. Now, don't turn off and go on to another episode now, because we're not done yet. As I always say, this is the beginning of the end. It's not the end. So not really else to add, to be perfectly honest. Going on about a lot of shit today. Spent half the show going on about RVs before finding out that I don't know what RV stands for. I thought I knew, but it wasn't what I thought. I sound ridiculous. And then there's some stuff about, some tripe about lemonade stands and that billionaire who's not Donald Trump, who's very much not Donald Trump, but he does some ridiculous thing involving his breakfasts, which he needs to be called out for. And I do that during this episode. What else is coming up? If you're listening to this in reverse order, this is a good time to say what's on the program, because you've listened through all of it now and I can tell you what you've missed, so you can go back and start again. You've missed a lot of stuff about caravans in the age of Little House on the Prairie. You've missed a lot of stuff about basements in department stores. You've missed a lot of stuff about the concept of punching down when you're the victim in some sort of movie horror thing where you've been dragged behind a car, and how that can end with you punching down in more ways than one. If that's all a surprise to you, then you haven't been listening properly. So you're going to get great value out of this episode now, because you get to go back and listen to it all over and again with fresh ears, a fresh mind and a fresh attitude. No offence, but you had the wrong attitude first time you were listening to this. You probably thought, oh, I listen to this as wallpaper music. Be like when you put on the oldie station. It's just wallpaper music in the background. I don't have to listen to it. It doesn't have to be anything. It's just there to stop my mind from wandering into horrors of my actual life. It's just a distraction. But so much of a distraction that I get distracted from it. No, that's what background music is for. This is not background music. This is stuff you want to have listened to and you didn't. So go back and listen to it again now, and then come back and thank me here just by thinking, oh, I'm glad I did that, when you hear this segment the second time. And then you've got great value out of this, and I'll feel like I haven't wasted a whole afternoon doing this, and probably the next 2 days editing it. That's all I ask. Listen to the fucking thing properly this time. And if you did listen to it properly the first time, or if this is your second go and you've listened to it properly now, well, then you're free to go at the end of this sentence.
Oh, wait,
though, no. Hold on. Don't go just yet, because I regret saying that. I regret what I just said, because that sounded aggressive. You're free to go. Implied that if you haven't done it the way I want it, you're not free to go. That's an awful thing to say to your listener. I take that back. I apologize for that tone. That was completely inappropriate, and it's not how I want to sound on here. Of course you're always free to go. This is a free country. You're here voluntarily of your own accord. This isn't a hostage situation, nor would I want it to be. I want you to want to be here, that's all. I want you to have a mindset whereby you think, I'm here of my own accord and I want to be here. In fact, I'm not going to leave yet. I'm going to listen to this a third time, and then I'm going to go back and listen to some of the back catalogue. Or nothing from before show 500, please. In fact, if you're a relatively new listener, I'd rather you listen to the very, very latest shows first in reverse order and not go too far back. Because I don't want you to know about the earlier stages of this podcast just yet. The first 700 or 800 episodes are pilot episodes, basically. That's all you need to know. If you ever watched Star Trek, that had 2 pilot episodes. And were of all absolute gripe. But at least by the time they got to episode 1 of the series, they had something going. They had something going. And then eventually, let's not go into Star Trek again. I've always gone on about Star Trek lately, I notice. I'm not even a Star Trek fan. I don't like Star Trek at all. I don't like Captain Kirk or the fellow with the ears or the Doctor or all the other people on that. It's a ridiculous program. I don't like it. Anyway, no, you are free to go, but I shouldn't say you're free to go, because it's not up to me to say whether you're free to go. You'd be right to be offended at that. That's no way to end a podcast. That's no way at all to speak to a listener or multiple listeners. There's no way to speak to them. I don't condone that. I do not condone. I condemn it. I condemn it outright. I'm going to end this normal way by saying, well, there's no way of ending this properly now and, reasonable, non-ridiculous way, as I've just made an idiot of myself. This is one of the worst endings I've ever done for this podcast, I have to say. One of the worst endings I've done, and it's not even over yet. So I suppose that makes it not an ending. The following is the ending. That's what we do. That's not the ending. That was just warm-up for the ending. I didn't pull the trigger on the ending yet, so to speak. So now I'll pull the trigger on the ending. This is the end of the program, and till the next time, which may well be after Christmas. Could the next one be after Christmas? It could. I hope not. I hope I make another one during Christmas. I suppose technically it would probably be after Christmas Day, will it? Well, how would you know? You don't know. I don't know either, though. Anyway, good morning.